stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. It's January 2023, and this is episode 90. Our guest today has been a coal miner. He's been a union representative, been a politician, athlete, and a good old boy from Wyoming County. Welcome, Harold Hayden. And Harold, you grew up in Mullins, didn't you?
Born and raised in Mullins. Spent a part of it outside of Mullins in Corrine, which I still consider Mullins, but you'll never see one of us from Mullins deny being there because we loved our town.
Now, your dad ran a business in Mullins, didn't he?
He ran a small version of Pete's and Bob's. He had curb service and hamburgers, hot dogs, custard, pizzas. He did that. He opened up in 47 and he died in 68. So he did that for quite a while.
What was that called?
Joe's Drive-In.
So you could go in and eat. Is that where you learned to play pool?
Did they have you could go in. No, they didn't have those small pool tables back then, but we'll talk about pool in a few minutes. You could go in and eat, or you'd have curb service just like King Tuck or one of them. He'd coming to your car. You could give them a quarter and play the jukebox from outside, or, you know, the music would be outside. But coal mines were close by. Ipman, Herndon, he had a real good business.
Did you ever have an inclination to take over the business?
When he died, I was, started working in the mines, and of course, his widow took over the business.
Now we'll talk about sports a little bit later, but you graduated from Mullins High School about the same time Dan D'Antoni did, didn't you?
Well, I was in 66 and Danny was in 65. We played guard on the same team. He was a little bit better than me, but yeah, we played ball together. And I was seventh or eighth man. I was a guard. Danny was a real good ball player. Had a good team.
Did y'all have any championship teams during that time?
No. Danny wasn't on a championship team. But the year after that, in 66, they state runners up that year. But Danny wasn't on a championship team. Don Stover come in as the coach about 65, and it took him two or three years to build the program. He got beat in the state finals in 66, and then Don left and went to Stonewall Jackson.
I remember that.
And I think he won maybe three state championships down there, and died at age 54, died as a young man. He always told me he had never take another high school job besides Mullins, unless it was Beckley or Charleston High, and he ended up at Stonewall. Yeah.
He played down at Pikes, didn't he, or something?
I think they won a state championship the same year Mullins won a championship in 55. He had a brother named Luther, and it was him. And he went to WVU to start with as a freshman with Akers and West, and then transferred to Morse Harvey.
I was thinking he might have played at Beckley College in between there somewhere. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I do recall that. Now, when you graduated from high school, Did you go right into the mines, or you went to Bluefield State?
I went to Bluefield State, and then I went to Beckley College, old Beckley College, and I got hours at Southern Community College. But then I went in the mines, stayed about 5 years, and then went to work for the union.
Yeah. Now, how did you, where did you work in the mines?
I started at Herndon, and then I left Herndon and skipped about a year, and then I went to Waco, and I was in my early 20s, I guess, and I took over as local union president at Waco and stayed there about 3 or 4 years, and then I run for a UMWA job and got elected in. I think I was about 27 then.
You know, when you got into the union representative, how often did you have to run for your office?
Every 4 years. Yeah.
So when you run for an office like that, do you go campaign like people do in regular politics?
Yeah, you go campaign. You have to have so many local unions to endorse you to get on a ballot. And once you get, I think it was 5 at that time, once you get to 5 local unions, and we had about 80 or 90, once you get to 5, then you're placed on a ballot. And you campaign and just like you would running for anything else. And at that time, we had probably 30,000 members in wow. District 29. So it was spread out over 9 counties. So it was a big area to campaign.
And it was when a lot of the mines were open, and the union was big at that time.
Right.
Now, I recall some of the names like Dennis Saunders and Everett Akard and some of those guys. I guess they were in office same time you were.
Yeah. When I first started as a district auditor, I was a district auditor for 2 years, and we had Mr. Carter, and then he was replaced by Dennis Saunders. And then you had Everett Akard, Joe Carter. Joe was from here in Staniford. Yeah, I got to work with several of them. And on the international, I started with Arnold Miller. Arnold was a friend of mine and was a big help to me when I was young. And then, of course, Rich Trumpkin, Cecil Roberts after that.
What's the difference between metallurgical coal and steam coal? I don't know.
Well, the low-vol met has got a higher BTU. The steam coal is a cooler coal that can be used in utility plants. The low-vol met, metallurgical, it's used in steel mills. And I don't think, a lot of people don't realize this, they think all coal's black. You know, it's the yeah. same, but probably if you had a utility plant to open up in Beckley, you would have to, if it opened up, well, let's say in Pinnacle Creek, you'd have to bring coal from Boone County probably to operate it, or Copperston, because it's a different kind of coal.
Huh.
Glen Lynn, I think that power plant they had down there was the last one, and they converted it over. It was the last one to be able to burn low-vol metallurgical coal because it burned the ovens up.
Now, how long did you work for the union?
About 30 years. Yeah. I got elected, I think 9 times. What happened was we consolidated District 29 and District 17, and I went to work in Charleston, worked down there about 10 years, and then retired.
Were there any major strikes or walkouts during
yeah,
that time?
Every day was a different day. We had the walkouts, we had the strikes, we had the 111-day strike, the 78-day strike, but thank goodness there hadn't been one since, well, they've got a selective strike in Alabama right now. It's been going on over a year. You know, when I was a local union president in the mid-70s, that's when everything changed. I could go in, sit down with superintendent and if something had happened, they owed somebody money, they'd just tell him to go to the mine office and they'd write him a check. But then we could have a $20 grievance and you'd have to wait on a helicopter to fly in. They started flying in personnel, and everything changed in the coal industry, you know, in the 70s. Then you had MSHA started in the late 60s, and they took a lot of experienced management people, turned into federal mine inspectors. And you had a lot of red cap coal miners, young guys, and they was, you know, they was several conflicts at that time.
Yeah.
And we got infiltrated with a group from California too. It caused us a lot of problems. You know, Eustace Frederick was over Consol, and he come to the office one day and we was talking about the strikes. And I said, Eustace, if you'd quit hiring those people from California, this stuff would stop. And he said, we ain't hired anybody from California. And I called downstairs and had the girl to bring up a check off. And his mines had several. And all you had to do is look at their social security numbers. You know, it wasn't like 232. It was, you know, it was some odd number. But what they'd do, they'd go to New Jersey and work somewhere for 6 months and then come down here and apply for a job, and they was getting through that way. But that was some tough times in the union. It was just tough times back then, yeah. I don't care who was president. It was just hard.
There's not that many union mines anymore, are there?
No, the laws has changed to where it's just hard to organize the mines, especially with a coal company. They'll bring in a lot of these corporations do. There's strike breakers out there now. They're, you know, that's all they do is out, you know, is come in and break unions and fight unions. And then now you got right to work laws that West Virginia's a right to work law state now. What happens is, you can have a right to work state. You can have 50% of the men paying dues, but the people that don't pay dues, you still have to represent them. If one of them would get fired, you got to represent him. You got to pay for an arbitrator. You got to spend money on him just like you do somebody paying union dues. And it weakens the union. And, it's wrong. I know in West Virginia now, for teachers, for AFSCME employees, it's illegal for the state and county to withhold union dues.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's just how far it went.
Yeah.
And when I was on the county commission, when I retired from the county commission, AFSCME, you know, I was a county employee, and I was sending them little something every month. You know, just to help them. And I got a letter out of Charleston telling me that was illegal now, that they couldn't withhold, they couldn't withhold union dues over the state payroll anymore. So
I'm glad you brought up the county commission thing. Let's go back a second. In this time when you're working for the union, you got married somewhere along the line, didn't you?
Yeah, I got married when I was 27 to a pretty young lady from Mullins, West Virginia, Sandy. Yeah.
She's a pretty good pool shooter, too.
She's a great pool player. Yeah, she certainly is.
Now, what about family? Do you, how many kids you got?
I got Kelly's stepson. Sandy had him when we married, and then we got Gerald. He was born in 75, so he's 47 years old now. Kelly, I think, is 54 now. Got two boys.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had a sister and a half-brother and, a half-brother and a stepsister, yeah.
Now, when you quit the union, you actually ran for the House of Delegates, right?
Well, while I was still in the union, I served in the House of Delegates.
Okay.
And the union encouraged people to do that, so we wouldn't have laws like right-to-work laws. It was, you know.
Yeah.
But I served in the legislature while I worked for the union.
then you were in House of Delegates, and then you ran for the state Senate against Juliet Rundle.
Juliet.
And you got beat.
She beat me.
Was that a close race or?
Well, the incumbent, if the incumbent come in third, if she split me and him up and cost me the election. She had a lot of money. And when you split coal miners and school teachers up, you know.
Yeah.
Normally school teachers was strong supporters of mine and of course coal miners, and once you split them up, that's what happened.
Then you decided to run for Wyoming County Commission. And what year did you get elected?
That was about 1990 I took office.
Okay.
About that time, well, me and Gaston Caperton was good friends, and he was elected governor. And Juliet had quit the Senate. And Gaston called me, wanting me to be a senator, and I said, no, I think I'm going to like this county commission. So I stayed on the county commission for 18 years.
Wow. And during that time was when they had the big flood around 2001. And not just Mullins, but Wyoming County pretty well got...
We got 11 inches of rain in 7 hours, and it just devastated our community.
Has Mullins recovered from that?
Mullins will never recover from it because of the floodplain. Once you get flooded like that and you're in a floodplain, it just really hurts. Of course, Mullins was a unique place. It was right down in a valley, and to get out of there when I was a kid, you had to go across Pure Point Mountain, you had to go across Tams Mountain, and if you went to Mercer County, you'd go across Herndon Mountain. So we just stayed home.
You were president of the county commission at one time. Then did you get beat running for county commission?
Yeah, I got beat my last time I run.
Uh-huh.
County commission's a tough job. You don't make careers out being a county commissioner because, you're close to people and things like the floods really hurts. But while we were there, I had good commissioners to work with, and we put water in about 5,000 homes. We got Hatfield's McCoy's Trail in. We got... our county certified as a business county. They were a lot of things we was able to do. 911, that's one of the first things we did, was set up a 911 system, my first year. But it was a good run as a county commissioner. We got a lot done. And I had good commissioners to work with, good people.
Now, Wyoming County now, I mean, there looks like it's going to be, there's a lot of positive things. I mean, first you get the highway from Sophia to Mullins, and that right there just kind of opened up a lot of different things, and it's just an easy drive now. I noticed that there's been a couple new restaurants and businesses open up, and then, of course, the Hatfield and McCoy Trail, but there's a couple manufacturing businesses opening, is from what I hear. Do you know anything about those?
No, not a whole lot. The problem we had in Mullins, Wyoming County, it's 87% owned by out-of-state land companies.
Yeah.
And the only thing that the people own is the valleys like Mullins, where you have trouble with water. They're talking about a big surplus in Charleston. If they want to do something in southern West Virginia, come and put water and sewer and roads on top of these surface jobs where it's flat, and you'll have people coming in. But until they do that, it's going to be really tough in Wyoming County. And they'll gain population, and they'll gain jobs. But I'm sure those county commissioners, they got their hands full. They're good. They work at their job good. But when 87% of your county is owned by someone else, I mean, that's pretty tough.
Well, I noticed the other day that Buck Stover was going to present something to the legislature about raising the taxes on these out-of-state owners, but I don't know whether that'll fly or not.
Well, I did that one time.
Did you?
I introduced a bill, and there's 22 of us voted for it, and what we had was excess acreage tax. Anything over 3,000 acres, you paid an additional tax. And they was people in pinstripe suits coming in from everywhere we'd never seen before. But the Republican Party at that time took a position of no, and then all the farmers, the Farm Bureau said no. If you do 3,000 now, you'll do 300 later. So we got beat 78-22.
Yeah.
But I wish him well. I mean, that's something, you know. But he'll never. I hope he gets it through. But he's got an uphill fight.
Your time in the legislature, the time we're taping this, the legislature's getting ready to go in session tomorrow, I think, or a couple of days. But what was the most difficult part about the job?
Well, we didn't have any money back then, and Arch Moore was the governor, and I don't blame him for that, but they just wasn't any money, and the state was facing layoffs, it was just, I guess, severance tax had went down so much, you know. But every day was a hard day when I was down there. But little small, simple stuff. Now, seat belts was a hot issue. And I got more calls on seat belts than I did taxes. You know, people was against seat belts. We passed a law that you had to wear blaze orange when you deer hunted. I come home and they jumped on me over that. One of them told me, said, I wore my hunting suit for 50 years. You're not going to tell me I can't want to wear the woods. But, you know, people told me, said, you'll be back. It's in your blood. And for a lot of people, that's true. It gets in their blood, but it never got into mine.
Well, sometimes some of the things they do now, I mean, it's some of the things they pass and some of the things they don't pass or don't talk about. I mean, it's almost comical. I mean, it's, and of course, everybody's got their own agenda, I guess, but that's something I always kind of wanted to work behind the scenes in politics, but I never wanted to be that politician. That's a lot of exposure to you and your family and those kind of things.
Yeah, you got some delegates that you'll have a constituent that'll stay after them, you know, roadkill bill or something, stay after them. And they'll go ahead for the heck of it and introduce something on it, and then the press gets a hold of it and makes it look a little silly. But it's tough when you're sitting there and you got some tough decisions, and every bill affects a lot of people. And you got a red button and you got a green button, and there's no yellow button there. You got to push one of them. And it's just so, and the county commissions like that, you'll have people coming in over wills or property or something, and you do everything by law and everything to be fair and honest with it, and both parties leave mad at you, you know. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, Harold, we got a lot more to talk about, but we're going to have to end this session. Can I get you to come back?
Sure.
Yeah, we haven't even started talking about running yet. But thank you for stopping by. And anybody else out there would like to be on our program, we'd be glad to have you. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And until then, God bless you.
Old West Virginia hills, how majestic and how grand. With their summits bathed in glory like our Prince Emmanuel's land. Is it any wonder then that my heart with rapture as I stand once more with loved ones on those West Virginia hills. Oh, those hills. Friends among those West Virginia.